to the How Did They Do It Real Estate Podcast. Have you ever wondered how people succeed in real estate and what steps they took to get there? If so, this podcast is for you. Your hosts, Sayla and Eileen Prack, interview top experts in the real estate community to share with you their real estate journey and how they achieved massive success. Our goal is to provide you with valuable real estate resources and to help you apply it to your own real estate goal. If you're anything like Sayla and me and believe that real estate investing is a great way to create passive income and build long-term wealth, check out our free apartment syndication due diligence checklist for passive investors at bonavestcapital.com/checklist. Sayla and I created this checklist for ourselves as we evaluated different multifamily syndication opportunities as a passive investor. So we would love to share it with you so you can use it as a resource as well. Download your free copy today at bonavestcapital.com/checklist. Welcome everyone to today's episode of the How Did They Do It Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Eileen Prack. And today I'm really excited to present today's guest to you, Neil Bawa. He is a technologist who is universally known in the real estate circles as the mad scientist of multifamily. In addition to being the most in-demand speaker in commercial real estate, he's also a data guru, a process freak, and an outsourcing expert. He's also the CEO founder of Grow Capitus, a commercial real estate investment company, and the CEO at Multifamily U, an apartment investing education company. And over 5,000 students have attended his multifamily seminars each year, and hundreds attend his Magic of Multifamily boot camps. I can't wait to dive into this interview today with you and learn about his outlook and what he's seeing about what's happening in the real estate market today. So welcome to the show, Neil. How are you doing?
Fantastic, Eileen. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, I'm really excited to have this conversation with you. And so for our listeners who aren't as familiar, can you just give a top-level brief background about, you know, who you are and what you're focused on currently?
Absolutely. So I am a technologist. You can call me a geek, you can call me a dork, a nerd, whatever. I come out of Silicon Valley. I'm very deeply tied to numbers. So I'm a data scientist and a computer science graduate myself. And my focus is on obsessively researching the best small to medium markets in the United States and figure out appropriate exit and entry and exit times and appropriate entry and exit asset classes. So while a lot of the folks that come to your show, Eileen, focus on multifamily, and I like multifamily, it's lovely. I work across a very large number of asset classes because I have a large investor database. There's 12,000 investors that are investing and looking at our projects. Currently, I think about 600 are actively invested in 22 projects across a lot of different verticals. So there's built to rent, there's townhomes, there's multifamily, there's student housing, there's industrial, there's self-storage, and I'm even forgetting some. So a lot of different verticals, and I'm constantly looking at tracking those and figuring out where there's a shortage. I'll give you an example of that so people really understand it. So Yardi Matrix last week published top 25 cities and their projections of how these cities are going to do in terms of rent growth in this year, in 2021. And so we took the article from Yardi Matrix and we plugged it into Slack so that all of our people could read. There's a research channel there. And so as people are reading, my director of marketing says, she's been with me for 3 years. It's still so counterintuitive to her. She says, amazing list. It's astonishing to see so many metros with double-digit rent growth. This, you know, she knows that this happens maybe once in 20 years, once in 30 years. And but she said, you know, what I was surprised to see was that Austin, which I expected to be at number one, was at number 11. Still phenomenal numbers in Austin. And then I saw Las Vegas at number two. And generally, most investors don't have a good opinion of Las Vegas. And I said, in the slideshow from Yardi Matrix, next to the rent growth, did you see completions? Yes. And what was the completion numbers for Austin? Well, it was 2.6 or something like that, 3%. That means that 3% of Austin's stock of multifamily is brand new. Like it just came in this year. So if there's 100 apartments in all of Austin, 3 have just come in this year. That's a lot. That's a lot to add in a year. And I said, what about Vegas? And she said, well, Vegas is at 0.8. So I said, so Vegas basically hasn't built any new apartments. So it shouldn't be surprising to you that even though Austin is clearly a far better than Vegas on most fundamentals, it just right now is delivering a lot. And so even though its rent growth is absolutely mind-boggling, Vegas is still beating it. That's an example of the sort of things that are so counterintuitive that even my own team sometimes has trouble, right? And those are the sort of things that we are obsessed about. We track hundreds of thousands of pieces of data every year to figure out these amazing markets that most of you haven't even heard of. and they make us an astonishing amount of money. We're exiting a project this quarter. Our investors are making 46% on this property annualized. This is an annualized number. So they're more than doubling their money. So it's like for 100K, they're making 140K profit on top of that. And you know what we're doing? So we put this property in the market. We bought it for 10.9 million. And the top bid came in at 23.3 million. Mm-hmm. And there were 20 plus bids, right? So 10.9 to 23.3. And people were like, oh my God, that's amazing. You should not buy it. Guess what we did? We matched the bid the next day and bought the property ourselves again. What we couldn't do is buy it off the market because, you know, obviously who sets the price? You know, our investors might be like, hey, you cheated us. So we put it in the market, paid $150,000 to a broker. He put 20 people in the pipeline that made offers. We matched that 23.3 bid. Because our data tells us, firstly, that it was the most phenomenal property in our entire portfolio. Nothing that we have comes close to it. It went through all of COVID with $3,500 in total delinquency across 180 units. That's how phenomenal the property is. And so when we look at our metrics are telling us that every other property that we're looking at is not as good as this one if we buy it again. So we bought it again.
Wow, that's incredible. And there's so much data out there. And so for you guys, you're constantly studying everything that's happening onto the market since for such a long time. So you guys have such a great knowledge about what's going on in this space. So at a top high level, what are some of the trends that you're seeing, especially in real estate now? And has COVID had any impacts of what's been happening and going on and where you see the future of real estate going?
COVID is a unicorn event. COVID is bigger than the stock market crash in 2000. COVID is bigger than the real estate crash in 2008. COVID, from an economic perspective, just from an economic perspective, is larger than World War II. COVID is truly a watershed moment in the history of the world in so many different ways. So the first and the biggest impact, as far as real estate is concerned, all of my comments are specific to real estate. I'm not saying COVID is the biggest thing in the world for everybody, but for people in real estate, this is the biggest moment. It wasn't World War II. It wasn't 2000. It wasn't 2008. And the reason for that is that 7 billion people, every single person on the planet changed because of COVID. We've had no event in modern history, not even World War II. There were hundreds of millions of people living in Africa that didn't know that it was a world war going on for 6 years. There were people living in Greenland and Siberia and South Africa that had no idea that a world war is on. But all of the 7 billion people of the world have been affected by COVID because there's no country that hasn't seen infections and deaths. When that happens, it subtly changes people's mentality. People want more space to live in. A lot of people have retired early, and that's changing the workforce. There's people that are like, I want taller ceilings. I want more windows. I want this. I want that. I want to buy a single family home. All of these people are just expecting the day COVID ends. And by the way, there's no real end, right? So this is just going to be one that its impact slowly ebbs over time. But even if there was an end, let's assume that one day a magic pill is discovered and the next day, 7 billion people take that pill and the world is free of COVID. The way the human mind works, you cannot snap back. Our mind is a collection of our triumphs and our trauma. And COVID is basically the biggest trauma in the history of the world. So that change that has occurred, it can't snap back in a year. It can't even snap back in a decade. Maybe a decade from now, it might be a distant memory and who knows, its impact might be less. So the impact that has made to real estate is phenomenal. And the first impact is this: hybrid work is real. Hybrid work is not just for COVID. When COVID ends, there is no scenario that we can fathom in which 100% or even 95% of the US white collar workforce will go back to work full time. That scenario doesn't exist. I've seen HR survey. It looks like 22 million white collar workers will basically have freedom from their desk because of COVID. And there's 330 million people in the United States, 333 million. About 80 million are white collar workers, you know, people that work at a desk, people like Eileen, people like Neil. We work at a desk, we work on a computer. And of those 80 million, roughly 22 million, which is about 26%, have been freed because of COVID. And those people, only 2 million of them moved so far. So the tip of the iceberg, of the 22 million people that are freed and can decide to go wherever they want, only 2 million, the early adopters, have moved. And that's what's caused this absolutely insane real estate market. We've seen insane real estate markets before. You know, 2005 was an insane real estate market. But there is no way that you can quantitatively say that today's real estate market is less insane than 2005. And the proof is simply this. In 2005, in 2006, home prices did not rise all across the United States by 17, 18%, depending upon which newsletter you're reading. It's either 17 or 18% increase in home prices. They increased by a little less than that. They were hot, but they weren't this number. But the bigger part of it is this. In that time frame, rents were increasing 3 to 4% a year. The United States just had 12% rent increases across the board in the last 12 months. And in superstar cities, you know, the Phoenixes, Denver, Austin, Raleigh, these superstar cities, they're in around 20 or even higher than 20%. Vegas was at 23% and Tampa came in at 23.5%. This is unprecedented. At no point am I able to find even a quarter, let alone a year, even a quarter going back the last 30 or 40 years that we have rent data for to match this. So why did it happen? Number one, hybrid work. 2 million people moved. And wherever they moved, they increased the demand for housing. Number two, ridiculously long interest rates at the same time when we had plugged in $1.5 trillion directly into the pockets of Americans, directly into their pockets. You know, in the past, in 2008, we were buying back bad bank bonds. Well, that was helping the banks and it was helping the stock market, but it wasn't necessarily directly putting any money into people's pockets. This time we put money directly into people's pockets. So if you look at bank balances in the United States, they are $1.5 trillion, $1,500 billion higher than before COVID started. So people have a lot of money saved up and they're spending it. They're spending it on various things, including real estate. But obviously, of the different sectors, you know, people buying cars, people buying real estate, people buying stock, the two that definitely are the hottest are real estate followed by stocks in terms of the heat increase that we've seen. So all of it really has been caused by COVID. All of it has been caused by this new trend of hybrid work. We just don't see a scenario in which people go back to being where they are. Remember, if in the next 30 years, you couldn't have trained 350 million CEOs around the world to run their company remotely. You just trained 350 million CEOs on how to run their companies remotely. That cannot be undone.
We love hosting this show. When we started this podcast, we were doing all the editing and post-production ourselves. Now, we are very excited to have this particular company as a partner of the show to do all the post-production for us, because it gives us the freedom to focus on the two things we care about, serving you, our listener, at a higher level and growing our own multifamily business. If you are like Sayla and me, then you want to add value to others while scaling your business. A podcast is the best way to do both, and we invite you to contact Adam Adams. He can help you launch your podcast, market your show for more listeners, and take all the post-production off your plate so you can focus on your business instead of in it. Listeners of this show can get a free consultation with Adam. To schedule your free consultation, find the link in the show notes. Yeah, no, absolutely. And so, like you said, there's such a shift in the mindset now. And through the pandemic, we've kind of seen it happening. But for you and all the data that you've seen, and of the 2 million that have been moving, have you noticed a trend of where the biggest movements have been? And then also within then, are we anticipating a big trend like this movement happening in the next couple months, you know, year, something like this, a big movement of people again?
Let me answer both parts of those. So I felt that most of them would move to super popular sort of places, sort of away from the blue states towards the red states. You know, so Phoenix, Austin, Boise kind of are three that come to mind, Florida for sure, Georgia, Atlanta. And we saw that, but I was actually wrong when I said the biggest moves are going to be to red states that people have already been moving to, especially in the Southeast. That was incorrect. I was absolutely incorrect. The biggest move was actually people moving from big cities, from dense areas to their distant suburbs. So in the past, we've seen people move from a city to like 20 miles away. But this time, the biggest move was people moving 50 miles away from the city, 60 miles away, because they now their companies are like, yeah, even when you come back to work, you can come in 2 days a week. So now they're basically going to these distant suburbs that are definitely, there's some farms in between and those sorts of things are happening. So that was actually where a massive percentage of people moved to. Now, some of these may come back to the cities at some point. It doesn't look like they will, but it's possible. And then there were about 1 million and a quarter that moved to some of these cities, right? So Austin, obviously, and San Antonio, massive beneficiaries. People moved to Dallas and Houston. I saw moves to Atlanta, Raleigh, Charlotte. Boise was just incredible. Boise, Idaho is an absolute talent magnet, an absolute magnet of any kind. So there was an explosive from a percentage perspective. Oh, and I forgot Phoenix. So Phoenix is obviously definitely a superstar when it comes to people moving. So those are kind of the trends that we're seeing.
Is it because of the affordability?
To an extent, right? So we love saying, and for years we've been saying, look, affordability, you know, Phoenix is cheaper than the San Francisco Bay Area. It's only a 2-hour flight away. But obviously these places are all becoming more expensive. You know, their home prices have been going crazy for a while. So affordability is only part of the reason. I think that there were people moving for a wide variety of reasons. There's another trend. There were three moves. I mentioned distant suburbs. I mentioned people moving to other states, to these places. And one of the big reasons that people are moving to a place like Phoenix was not necessarily affordability, but because a large number of companies are moving there, younger companies. And the bigger companies are now opening more and more locations in these places and opening less and less locations in, let's say, expensive blue states. So there's a shift there. And it's not new. It's been going on for a while. Companies took advantage of COVID to say, hey, we're going to accelerate that shift, but it was going for a while. The third one is the most profitable. People move to places with very attractive quality of life. And in many cases, those were people that were born there. There were people that were born there. So the sort of places that saw that kind of a move are not cities that you've heard the most of, but they had the most percentage growth. They're the most profitable post-COVID. People move to Boise. But Boise is really expensive right now. Rents rose almost 30%. Home prices rose 41% in the last 12 months. So obviously, Boise is a lot more expensive than it was a year ago. So people in Idaho are now moving to Idaho Falls. It's a small city, 125,000 people. The metro is still under 200,000. But a lot of people like Idaho Falls. So people have moved there from Utah. People have moved there from the state of Idaho. People have moved to Coeur d'Alene. Or people have moved to Spokane. We talk about Seattle being kind of the big dog, but there's a lot of people that have moved from Seattle to Spokane. It's only a couple-hour drive. It's not too bad. You look at what else? People from Phoenix are moving to Tucson because Phoenix is getting really, really expensive. So they're feeling like Phoenix is no longer cheap. So now you've got a next-level migration that's happening, right? Utahns, they have only one warm city in their state, and that's St. George, which is, you know, at the southern tip of Utah. And so Utahns have gotten so rich in the last 10 years that there's massive numbers of Utahns that move to St. George, a very nice, warm place with red cliffs. North Carolina, we love to talk about Raleigh and Charlotte and these superstar cities, but people actually found that they were getting expensive and started moving to Asheville, which is a very beautiful town with an amazing quality of life, great weather. So we started seeing the rise of the true tertiary, the rise of the true tertiary. Not, you know, Durham's not a true tertiary because Raleigh is only 20 minutes away. So we talk about Durham being better than Raleigh, but that's not a true tertiary. But Asheville is a true tertiary. There's nothing else within 80, 100 miles of Asheville. So these true tertiaries, in my mind, are the greatest success stories of COVID.
And so especially in real estate, you know, we've seen the influx of population movement and we're seeing cap rates starting to compress significantly. And one of the big things that are on people's mind is there potentially going to be a market crash or a bubble burst or something like that within real estate? And is the market going to be able to sustain itself with all the rises and increases that we've been seeing so far in the market? And is this going to continue?
Okay. Well, my first answer to that is, yeah, the market's going to crash. But good luck if you're sitting by the sidelines, because it takes a while for these crashes to occur. There's a lot of people that talk about gloom and doom scenarios because they like to be right. Eventually, any market that has prices only going up for stocks and real estate and Bitcoin will crash. So they love to predict this, knowing that they're ultimately going to be right. So the big question is, how long does it take for the market to crash? And what does the crash mean? Is it 5%? Is it 10%? I want to point out to you the relative crashes in these three popular asset classes: stocks, bonds, and Bitcoin. Bitcoin's a big deal because it is now, like gold, it is representative of people's fears. So it's representative of their fear of what is going to happen. So COVID happened, and you saw the stock market dropped 35% in a month, right? So that's March to April. And then it slowly went back up and has even gone on from there as the fear dissipated. Bitcoin dropped all the way down to 7,000 from where it was. I think it was at 30,000. So it dropped to a quarter of its value. It's the most volatile asset of the three. So it dropped to 7,000. And then when people's fear dissipated, Bitcoin went from 7,000 today to 63,000. So it's gone up 9 times since late April, early May last year. Real estate dropped 0%. At no point is there data from April or May or June last year suggesting that there was a drop in real estate in the United States. I'm sure that there were individual markets that dropped 5% or 7% for a month or so before they normalized. But even if that data is there somewhere, it was a one-month blip. So you look at these three asset classes, and the question I ask you is this: either there is an everything bubble or there's no bubble. I believe that there's an everything bubble. I think there's a bubble in real estate, a bubble in stocks, a bubble in commodities. There's a bubble in technology. There's a bubble in Bitcoin. So there's a bubble that is around every asset class in the world today. And the hardest bubbles of all to burst are the everything bubbles. They're very rare. And if there's a bubble in everything, then it's very, very difficult to deflate that bubble. Why? Because it's supported by the entire financial system. If there's a bubble in only one thing, like tulips, you know, we had a bubble in Holland in the 1600, a famous one in tulips. There's nothing else bubbly around it. So at some point, relative to everything else, it just is unsustainable. The question is, if every asset goes up, who's to say what is unsustainable? Inflation is at 6%. It was at 1.5% the last 4 years. So in a high inflation environment, don't you think the price of things goes up? So what we are seeing is that there are people saying real estate is now 30%, maybe 40%, I'll say 30% more expensive than 12 months ago, and it's going to crash. And Bitcoin is now 700% more expensive, and it's not going to crash. The stock market is at 50% more expensive, and it's not going to crash. So of all of these asset classes, the one that's actually gone up the least is real estate. But that's the one that's going to crash first. So my belief is the everything bubble, because of its very nature, all of it has to pop at once. And I think that at some point we're in for that kind of a calamity. When will it happen? I don't think that it's easy to break. I think that it's a very, very difficult bubble to break, because what every Federal Reserve in the world and every government in the world is highly motivated to prevent the everything bubble. And because of this, I don't believe that at this point there's any significant chances that multifamily or single family real estate will see price declines. There might be a slowdown. Those slowdowns are normal. They happen all the time. But price declines or cap rate increases, I find it very, very difficult to look at the data, to look at the $15 trillion of brand new liquidity searching for yield and say that cap rates in the United States are going to go up. If anything, I'm going to make a prediction. Cap rates in the United States for all multifamily assets, A, B, C, and a brand new asset class that didn't exist 5 years ago, built to rent. In my mind, built to rent is easily by far the best asset class in multifamily. So you got built to rent, you got A, B, and C. And by the way, those who are wondering what's the difference between built to rent and Class A. Class A is new construction. Class A is apartments. Built to rent is never apartments. It's always single family built to rent or townhome built to rent. So you're building a better quality product for a higher quality audience, usually a family. An apartment, you have a brand new apartment, you can have a single live in it, but you'd never have that happen with a built to rent because usually they're townhomes and single family homes. So now it's built to rent A, B, C. I'm going to predict, and today is October 25th, 2021, that 1 year from today, cap rates for all four asset classes will be lower, not higher.
Wow. So overall, what is your perspective of real estate and has your investing strategy shifted?
I really hate where we are today. I like being in markets that make sense. Nothing makes sense. So nothing makes sense to me. Nothing makes sense to my math. And in a weird way, everything makes sense. So I explained to you why real estate is going up, right? We've been talking about the fact that it's actually gone up less than other asset classes. I just don't like being in a world where my future is basically being decided by a bunch of people sitting in Washington and deciding when they're going to raise interest rates. Because what does that have to do with real estate? But unfortunately, the truth is today, it has everything to do with real estate. When they raise interest rates, how much they raise it by. If the Fed stops buying mortgage-backed securities, obviously it'll affect the liquidity in that marketplace. So I hate being in a marketplace that is not straightforward, but I am in it. So my stance is be careful. It is a volatile market. Irrationality is increasing and margins are decreasing. So if you're going to be in the market, either find better markets like Build-to-Rent or be extremely careful with what you're doing. Even with Build-to-Rent, which is a fantastic asset class at this point in time, it's more profitable. The tenants live longer. The quality of the tenants is higher. Even with that, we're pre-selling as we're building because we don't want the maximum profit. We don't want to take the risk the market will crash. So if somebody comes to us and says, I've got a $5 billion fund. I'll buy your property. Here's a discount. Please take it. Yep. So that we're taking risk off the table. And that's what I would suggest to people. Find ways to take risk off the table and keep moving forward.
So Neil, you've put out so much content out there with all your data analysis and a lot of resources out that you provided to your listeners and to your network. Is there a place that our listeners can also get a hold of the information that you have available out there?
Yes. So we love publishing research. We're basically a bunch of geeks that like playing with numbers. So the research is all at multifamilyu.com. That's multifamily followed by the letter u.com. And you'll see that already this year, we presented 10 data-driven webinars. These are very complex webinars that are very in-depth. The research, it runs into hundreds and hundreds of pages. We post all of the supporting information that doesn't make it into the webinar on our website as well in a place called the Toolkit. And then, so you get 70, 80 slides, 90-minute webinars. And we've done 6 or 7 of them today. The one that I would recommend from the past that's already recorded is called Disruptive Trends. We talked about one disruptive trend today, hybrid work. There are 10. If there's any other trend that's in there that's super powerful, it's called tokenization. So go in there. You'll see hybrid work in that deck, but go to tokenization. It'll blow your mind for what is about to happen to real estate. Now, in the next 2 months, I'd love to invite you to 3 of our webinars. We have a Build-to-Rent webinar that's coming basically 10 days from today. So I think it's on November 4th. That explains what is this Build-to-Rent phenomenon? Why is it the biggest, by far the biggest thing that's happening in real estate? Then we have one that talks about the 55 plus adult class. So once again, multifamily is a great asset class, but within multifamily, there are subclasses that are better. And the 55 plus active adult asset class is truly phenomenal. This has nothing to do with senior housing. These are not people that need nurses. They're well, but they want to live in a community where there's other active adults. And then the third one is we're doing a webinar. And that one, I think, is at the end of November. And then in the beginning of December or mid-December, we're doing a third webinar, ones that all require 100 hours plus of research. We're doing a webinar on the emergence of prop tech. Prop tech or property technology is now the second hottest vertical for venture capitals to give money to. And it was like at some point, it was basement. It was like the last thing that venture capital wanted to invest into 5 years ago. And today, everybody wants in. And I want to tell the story of property technology and the insane, absolutely insane valuations that prop tech companies are getting today. 10 billion, 20 billion, 50 billion. These numbers are crazy. And I'm not talking about Airbnb when I say 50 billion. I'm saying 50 billion for a company you've never heard of. So that is going to be mid-December because I think prop tech is also an extremely powerful phenomenon and it's tied back to tokenization of real estate. So you're welcome to come to multifamilyu.com and check those webinars out. It's fun to do them, to attend them live because there's, you know, usually 600 to 1,000 people that are attending them. So there's tons and tons of questions.
Awesome. Well, Neil, thank you so much for your time today. And I definitely appreciate you sharing your outlook.
Thanks so much for having me, Eileen.
And thank you for listening to our podcast today, brought to you by Bonavest Capital. We would really appreciate it if you can go to iTunes right now and leave a rating and written review. Also, please don't forget to subscribe so you can always get the latest episodes. You can also connect with us on Facebook, How Did They Do It Real Estate. We'd love to hear your feedback and any topics that you're interested in for future episodes. Lastly, to learn more about us, you can go to bonavestcapital.com and fill out the contact us page so you can speak to us directly. Nothing on the show should be considered as specific personal advice. Please consult your legal, tax, and real estate professionals for individualized advice.